The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Friends, and thanks again for joining us here on this OTC. We are throwing together some crazy stories that's been sent to us, been forwarded to us by all you badass listeners. And today with me, I have a treat. I have Mr. I'm in a good mood, Kyle Filson, sitting over here beside me now.
How's it going, everybody? Yeah, I'm in a pretty good mood. I had some technical problems. This is a thing that I unfortunately experience quite often. And it's always with like computers and stuff. For whatever reason, I couldn't get my iTunes to sync up with my phone. And so I had spent quite a bit of time putting together, recording,
would you
sampling.
Say substantial? A substantial
I wouldn't say
amount
substantial.
Of time?
No, not substantial. Substantial for me. So I'd say an hour and a half of recording these clips, taking it into Audition and editing the clips the way I wanted to, you know, boosting the volume and cutting out parts that
making
were unnecessary,
right.
Making a bunch of clips for today's episode. And then I put them into iTunes and then I created a playlist and I tried to transfer the playlist to my phone and for whatever reason it wouldn't cooperate. So it's just one of those things. It's one little step that I'm missing and this always happens, but it just, it's frustrating because I can't diagnose, like, what's the problem? You know, like, if your car won't start or turn over, you can go through a few couple steps and kind of narrow it down pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, but when computer people can narrow
right,
this
right,
down.
Exactly.
But
so,
not
like,
us.
People that aren't familiar with working on vehicles, they may have a harder time determining why their car won't start. But for me, it's always with, like, the computer stuff. So, like, I don't know why it doesn't work. I've done it 1,000 times before, but not today. So, it could be something as simple as an update. It could be as something as simple as, you know, you got to give authorization to this. But I transfer songs and edited clips.
You stream illegally. So, yeah, you should know how to do all this.
All the time. And so when I was heading over, I was trying to use these clips, put them on my phone, and then I could show up at Skeleton Studios, and then I could sample these for a part of the segment that I'm going to cover later. So what
you're
I'm going to do
gonna
is
get the segment
you're still
going
to get to hear them, but I'll be adding those in post production. So, but yeah, outside of that, I've been doing good. The kids are back in school. So
well, before we go any further,
sure.
You have to tell the story. Your wife told me at y'all's house the other day about Luke wanting to go see it.
Okay, so everybody that listens to the show knows that my youngest, Luke, is a huge horror fan. He loves horror movies. They don't scare him. He loves them. I don't know why, but he loves them. So, of course, he's seen the original It, and he's also seen the newer version of It, and, of course, the newest version.
And how old is he?
He's 7. The newest version just came out, right? And so he's been chomping at the bit to go see it, and my wife's like, well, I'm going to have to go watch it first because it's rated R. I just want to make sure it's okay for Luke to see. And what we mean by okay is I don't care how gory it is or anything like that. That's not what I'm worried. You know, curse words, sex, things like that. Those are things that he shouldn't see because he's been in trouble at school a few times already for cursing. He curses at his brothers. He curses. Yeah, right. And my wife immediately points the finger at me. It's because you let him watch YouTube. I'm like, listen, kids are going to hear these words. You can't stop it. Of course, you know, you try to keep him from saying it in public.
He goes to the baseball games.
Yeah.
Like, look, you do your best.
Anyways, so Dalee on her own went to the movies when It came out, like the Thursday it came out. She went by herself, had a good time. She said there was only like 4 people in the theater, and she enjoyed the movie. She said it was a good movie. So, but the bad news is, she said, man, there's a lot of cursing. Like, they use the F word like every minute. Pretty much throughout the whole movie.
He don't need to see
that. So Luke can't see that. No, it's too much. You know, if there's one little curse word dropped here and there, it's okay. You'd be like, yeah, it's all right. Or, you know, if there's one sex scene, you'd be like, close your eyes. Don't you remember when your parents would be like, look away for 5 minutes.
Look away.
Yeah. But apparently there's a lot of gore and stuff like that. We're not worried about that, but a lot of cursing. So Luke gets home from school. He knows that Dalee went to the movies to watch it. And she's like, look, bub, you're not going to be able to watch it. You're going to have to go see Angry Birds 4 or the new Dora the Explorer or whatever. And he is upset. He's mad. He's crying and pouting. And my wife's like, look, you know, tomorrow I'll take you to the movies and we can go see the new Dora or we can. And she gives him a couple options. I don't remember what they were. And he's like, okay, you know, he drives it. You know, well, I'll get you all the popcorn you want, some candy, soda, maybe even a toy if you're good. And so he agrees. So they go to the movies and they're holding hands and they skip up to the front of the theater, you know, and he's like, hey, mom, do you mind if I get the tickets? And she's like, sure, that's fine. Just make sure you tell the woman or the man that's working there that you need one adult and you need one child for Dora the Explorer or whatever it's called. And he's like, okay. So they get up to the counter and first thing he says is, hello, ma'am. I need one adult and I need one kid for It. I was like, no. We're not seeing It. And he was like, all right.
He tried.
He tried to sneak it in there.
He shot his shot.
He tried one last time and they went to the other movie. And she said that he enjoyed the other movie, but not as much as It. So immediately when he gets home, he, of course, really quickly passes over the other movie they saw. But he starts talking about It. Well, can I watch It next week? Or how about when my birthday comes in November when I turn 8? Will I be able to go see it then? Because he knows that when the movies come out in the theater that they'll be on iTunes relatively quickly. So he's already smart enough to know that in November it'll probably be out on iTunes. And I'm like, no, we can't rent it on iTunes. Well, why not? I'm like,
this is going to be a battle
because
for a while.
There's too much cursing, you know. And he's like, darn it, you know, darn it. He's like, when I'm 18, can I watch it? I was like, yes, absolutely. So he brings it up still quite often. And my wife's like, stop bringing it up. Don't even talk about it. I'm tired of hearing about it.
What's going to be funny is you're going to end up going to bed one night when it's out on iTunes. Oh, he's going to go get his brothers and they're going to set it all up for him. And then he's going to get in there and watch it.
Right. So he had to go get a flu shot the other day. And he's not really as bad as the older boys were when they were his age. When the twins were 7, yeah, they put up quite a bit of a fit when they had to get a flu shot or any kind of shot, that is. And but Luke, not so much. He's like, you know, you could tell him he's trying to reassure himself. He's like, it doesn't hurt that bad, right? It's just kind of like an ant bite, right? I'm like, yeah, that's exactly
talking
right.
himself,
talking
into
himself
it.
Into it. So he did a good job, and Dalee promised to give him a little toy. So he went to Target, and apparently in Target they sell Pennywise toys.
Oh no! So does now he get one?
He got the new Pennywise with like the spider arms, and you could change the heads out from the new movie, even though he clearly hasn't seen the new movie. He's very familiar with the trailers. So,
well, there was a chainsaw on the couch when I was over there the other day.
Oh, yeah, I got conned into that. So
he has an electric chainsaw that's from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of where we found that at Home Depot. So let me rewind a little bit. Luke for Halloween wants to be the Predator. Okay. Shocker. Shocker. I know, right? Yeah. Wants to be the Predator. I saw a tear come to my dad's eye when he told me. And so Delee, my wife, actually found a pretty cool looking Predator costume on Amazon. It's like $60 or something. So I was like, yeah, dude, order it. Order it up. Get it coming this way.
He's got to be dressed as Predator.
But Luke has a really...
But he does this every year. He has like four. And he wants to get all the outfits, and then he wants to pick out what he wants to be.
He has a grandiose idea of what this Predator outfit's going to be. Like, I showed it to him on Amazon, but he thinks it's going to be like a fully functioning helmet like in the movie with the laser on the shoulder and the hoses that when you pull them out, they go...
Why don't you cosplay it up?
And he wants to know if that when he looks, will it be red and thermal? And I'm just like, no, it's just a costume. It's not an authentic Predator outfit. It's a costume. So anyways... He's going to be the Predator. Well, the other day we were at Home Depot, and I don't remember what we were getting. Oh, I know what I'll tell you in a minute. We went to Home Depot.
Here we go.
And apparently Home Depot has really spiced up their Halloween decorations, and in there was this toy chainsaw that looks like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And, of course, he wants it.
Is he going to be Leatherface now?
It's like $30. I'm like, you know, I was like, what do you, I mean, you don't need that. And he's like, but I want to be Leatherface for Halloween. And I was like, I thought you were going to be the Predator for Halloween. He's like, no, no. And I asked my wife, I go, did you order that Predator costume yet? She goes, no, I haven't ordered it yet.
When he found out it wasn't a legit Predator thing, he don't want it now.
I don't know. But I was like, did you order it already? And she was like, no, I haven't ordered it yet. And I was like, okay. I was like, so you're going to be Leatherface for Halloween. Yes, that's it. That's what I'm being. Well, I guess you got to have the prop then. There was only like three of them in there. And I was like, if I don't get that right now, there won't be any here.
Yeah.
If I come back, you know, next week or 2 weeks.
Now I hope he goes as Leatherface.
I bought the chainsaw. Well, when you came over the other day and saw it, and he showed you, and, you know, he's proud of it. Now he wants to be Predator again.
With the chainsaw.
And he tried to tell me that in one of the Predator movies, the Predator had a chainsaw. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure. He's getting to the age where he's starting to tell some tall tales. You're like,
now look, you can lie to me about a lot of stuff, but you can't lie to me about Predator.
Yeah. So now he's going to be the Predator again, and he just suckered me into buying him the chainsaw from Leatherface. So I was like, well, why don't you just try to find a Leatherface mask and just order that up too? So, because if you don't know, he's got a whole big plastic tub with all types of costumes. A lot of them he inherited from his brothers when they were little. So there's probably four or five different ninja outfits in there.
Oh, for sure.
Power Ranger outfits that he's collected from his brothers. Darth Vader, Stormtroopers. Trying to think of what he's Iron Man, Captain America.
He needs to go.
Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees. I mean, he's got a whole bunch. So, you know, if he's got the Predator in the Leatherface, hey, why not? Just put it in there. But back to why we are at Home Depot. Yeah, my refrigerator went out. Dun, bum, bum, bum. You come home from work, there's water everywhere. Yeah. All your food is being destroyed. And just so happens, my wife went grocery shopping like the day prior.
Yeah.
It wasn't like when you need to go to the stores, like we had just packed that thing full of food.
And it died.
So I had to go buy a new refrigerator. Yay! I love spending $1,700. And
they're not cheap anymore.
It was actually delivered today. Yep. So I bought the thing like a week ago.
Does your wife love it?
So far, I mean, I've only been home from work probably an hour. So I don't know.
Yeah.
She was talking about all the room and stuff we have. Of course, the kids like it. So now they're opening it and shutting it and opening it and shut. I don't know what the appeal is. It's a refrigerator. Instead of one door, it's got two doors. That's the only difference I can see. It's the little things, yeah. Cam. It's the little things.
Yeah.
Like when we go to baseball tournaments, I mean, I'm telling you, Luke's favorite part is the hotel. He loves the hotel. I don't know why. There's nothing in there but the beds and the television. Some of them have little kitchenettes. He doesn't cook.
Well, maybe if you gave him a room outside of the closet, because you always make him sleep in the closet.
We do. We go out to eat or we go to the movies. I usually like throw some peanut butter in there, a loaf of bread, and then I put a padlock on there. And he's usually good.
A couple bottles of water.
His flashlight. Yeah. He's good. Don't tell anybody.
He's fine.
Don't tell CPS. So what's been going on with you?
I haven't been dealing with it. What's up?
Before you even start, I have one more thing that's happened to me. And I need to bring this up. This will be quick. So the other day, I was getting ready to go up to McKinney, which is about an hour and a half. It's about 90 miles away from where we live. I had to go up there to do some real estate work. And, you know, this is something I do all the time. Every 2 or 3 weeks, I just check the oil of my vehicles. I've always been good with that. Mm-hmm. And I've always changed the oil whenever it needs changing. And I've had multiple vehicles that have gone over 400,000 miles. So I'm a true believer. As long as you just check those fluids and change them,
yep,
you get a lot of use. Well, the other day, I was going to go check the dipstick to see how the oil was doing. And there's a big loop, right? The plastic loop that's on the dipstick.
Yep.
When I pulled it, snapped right off. So the dipstick's still in there. And the loop's off of
now
there.
Now you got to get a pair of pliers.
Well, I looked down in there and it snapped off like even. It's like, of course, because they made it out of plastic instead of metal. So I got to figure out a way to check that and get that fixed.
You got to get some hemostats. Is that what those things are called?
Yeah. Down in there? I've got a couple for tying flies.
Yeah.
But anyways,
get those down.
So that was one more thing that befell me this week.
Well, the only thing that I've been really monkeying around with is about 6 weeks ago, I hurt my back.
Oh, I know.
Filling feeders, like, you know, getting older, strained, a lower back strain. And I don't take any medicine, so I'm an idiot if you talk to my wife. And so I didn't do anything and kept going to.
You don't take any pharmaceutical medicine?
No, yeah. I don't
organic medicine.
Well, right? I take blood pressure medicine because I have it runs in my family. And, you know, just like we've said before, it got my pop, like it got Kyle's dad. So it's one of those things. So I have to take stuff like that. Well, I never took anything like I don't take ibuprofen. I just don't do it. Like if you're sore, I'm like, well, I'm just sore. It'll be fine. I'll just drink a lot of water and, you know, stretch a little bit and that'll be it. Well, it wasn't it. And it finally rocked on. I was going to jiu-jitsu practice. We was going to train, you know, every week and it's not getting any better. And I know training didn't help, but I'm stretching and keeping it warm. Anyway, long story short, finally I had to go to the doctor and she had to put me through the ringer on that whole thing. And it's like a severe sprain or lower back strain. Good thing is I don't have any like disc damage. They looked at everything's good on that whole thing. So now I have to take these muscle relaxers for like the next 10 or 12 days and these ibuprofen, like these big anti-inflammatory pills. And she said, and do these certain stretches and all this. And she said, you'll be better in about 2 weeks. But I will say this, I've been doing it now for about 3 days and I am feeling 50% better than I was.
Well, that's good.
So I horse-assed around for 6 weeks before I ever went and did it. And I'd already been over it if I'd have just gone. Because my wife was like, just go to the doctor. She's always pushing me to go.
I think women as a whole are much better about going to the doctor than men, right? You don't meet too many women.
I should have listened to her. But I'm an idiot.
Refuse to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
But I know lots of men that are like, no, and I'm guilty. Like, I don't go to the emergency room unless, like, it's an emergency. Like, I don't go up there when I get a splinter or I don't feel good. I've been coughing. I mean, like, there's blood and I can't get it to stop flowing.
Then I'll go.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have, like, I can't even count how many broke toes I've had.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, tape it to the next one.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, what else are you going to do about it? You know, or you break your finger, you're like, tape it to the next one. It's what are you going to do?
I mean, how many times have I broke my nose? Probably seven,
gosh.
Probably easily. Yeah. And
I was trying to add up how many concussions you've had and I've had that I have on paper.
Several.
I think I've got 4 or 5 on paper that I know for fact was checked out as concussions. And you, I would roll the dice and say it's a baker's dozen.
Oh, at least.
On paper, like to the doctor and it's a concussion. Because this started back when we were young.
I would say it would go all the way back to when I was like real. My first incident was running.
When you ran into the tractor.
And I rode dirt bikes. And so you'd wad those suckers up. And I can remember lots of times like having a headache that didn't go away for like 2 or 3 days.
Couldn't look at
and
the
And I
lights.
Had a helmet on even.
Yeah.
I remember I knocked myself completely out cold on my dirt bike one time.
You got knocked out cold at a soccer game we were all at watching y'all play in.
In high school, yeah. I jumped up for a header, and when I came down, landed on a guy's knee or something. You know, and I don't remember. I remember playing the next minute. I was like on the sideline. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
You like, just sit here, smoked. Drink water.
Yeah. And that was before they did all the tests like they do now, where they do before and after and all that so they can tell if you got them. Like back then, it was like, oh, yeah, he's probably got one. Let's look at his eyes. Yep, he's probably got one. And then that was about it.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up. I was reading an article not too long ago about CTE. And they said that unless you are like really sedentary, like you don't do much, like you just sit at home, play video games, you build stuff with Dwarven Forge or like Stephen Hawking, like you're, you know, stuck in a wheelchair, that almost – like a good 80 to 90% of people have some form of CTE, especially males.
I got you.
They said lots of things. You can get it from like water skiing and hitting the water, jet skiing. Because, you know, you're bouncing when you're on a jet ski to.
We may have to rethink these numbers.
Bull riding. I mean, like I'm saying, if you did anything that was, you know, pretty strenuous, there's a good chance you probably have a minor case of CTE.
Check and check.
Yeah. And that's another thing with CTE is they say it doesn't affect everybody.
That's what's weird.
Some people I mean, like Alistair Overeem. He doesn't. He seems fine. I mean, I've seen him stopped probably 12 times. I mean, like dead.
Francis Ngannou killed him, and he came back to life.
And then there's that's right. That looked like a video game. Then there's other people that never really knocked out in their career in boxing, say, but like maybe once or twice. And man, like 4 or 5 years later, they're they're bad. Like what's the McNair, the quarterback for the old Bears, the 85 Bears. Remember him?
Yep.
Dude, he's bad. Like, he can't find his keys. He can't find his car.
Yeah, they talked about it.
He forgets where his jeans go, like what drawer.
That's bad.
I mean, he just played football. Then there's other guys like Terry Bradshaw, who he played in an era where all bets were off. You could just floorboard a quarterback.
There was no safety for the quarterbacks.
And, I mean, he seems fine. And how old's Terry? He's got to be 70-something.
107.
107.
He's
107. I think he trimmed his hair and he was on the Quaker Oats box. I mean, this guy's had a long career. So that's the thing too, is it doesn't affect everybody. I guess it's like that with a lot of things. Some people can never smoke a cigarette in their life and then die of like lung cancer. And then you can find a 98-year-old who's been smoking since they were 8 and they're totally fine.
My aunt passed away years ago from started out as lung cancer and then became breast cancer and all that. And she never smoked. And then my grandmother on my father's side passed away when she was 92 or 94. And she smoked for almost 50 years of her life. And she ate bacon and drank coffee black. She believed that if you put anything in your coffee that you were weak, that you're not supposed to do. Like, nothing went in her coffee but water. That's what it was.
Well, probably because when they were raised, they didn't have these. They didn't have this butterscotch flavored creamer. No, I mean, you know what I mean?
She didn't have that. Poor out in West Texas on a peanut field.
Especially if she was that old. So she was born in like 1904.
Yeah, she would look. And if you put something in your coffee, like if I had sugar, she'd just look at me and shake her head. Like the world was going to hell and her grandson was leading because I put coffee or sugar in my coffee.
Do they still make like the cubed sugar? You know, it's like a little cube. It looks like the size of a dye. I remember that when I was a kid. I don't never see it anymore. They're like, how many lumps do you want?
Yeah.
And then I remember the old Bugs Bunny commercial cartoons. They'd say, how many lumps you want? And then whack, whack, whack.
And then I think about, what is it? Def Leppard's. Pour some sugar on me. What, you want one lump or two?
Yeah, see?
Do you think he became a better drummer when he only had one arm for Def Lepp?
I don't know.
I mean, that dude can drum.
They're still playing. They're at the Windstar not too long ago.
Okay. We got to stop this. We got to get into some crazy stories, and we've got piles of them to share with y'all, folks. And I've got you one now. Now, this goes back into our love for upright canines.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to this. It says in Western Pennsylvania on Crescent Mountain in 1965, I was exploring the woods with a friend who lived in the area. And we crossed a stream at the bottom of a ravine and went uphill. All right, this is something that Lon just posted, and he knows how much we love dog men. It says, maybe a mile upslope in trees, we came upon a dome made of interlaced tree branches. You digging this, Philly?
I am.
A dome. I'm thinking of Ewoks. It says, it was tall enough for me to enter without bending over. I did so, and it stank horribly. Inside, we found fresh timothy grass laid out in a kind of pallet or bed in one end. There was no debris of humankind anywhere, but there were small bones and sticks. Now, we couldn't stand the odor and backed out, and then felt that we were being watched from upslope. Growing nervous as dusk fell, we left fast, and we told his father about it, who dismissed it as a hobo's hutch. So he's talking about his buddy that's with him. Now, we found many of those. It was not a person who made what we found. We glimpsed a shadow moving and maybe a glint of eyes also. So they're talking about they found a lot of these little huts. Reflective eyes can be down to something as simple as the lurker wearing glasses, we were told. But it had felt more animal than hobo to us. So one foggy Saturday morning, I was again visiting my friend. We preferred roaming the woods to wandering in town where I lived. We were sprawled on the floor watching an old horror movie neither of us understood. I think it was Dementia 13, which seemed incoherent. It did feature a good many spooky images and a few jump scares, so it held out interest, especially with the fog that day. And we heard a thump on the front door. Glancing across the living room, we saw a dog's face gazing at us through the middle of three narrow windows set high on the door. It would have had to been 6 or 7 feet tall to peer in through those windows.
A dog or a doll?
A dog.
Okay.
Like a wolf face. Its gaze shined, and we both screamed, thinking werewolf. As we screamed, it dropped down below the door's windows, and nervously, we peered out the picture window that took up most of one wall of the room. In the fog, we saw it again, moving past, just far enough away to be little more than a shadow. This thing was upright, and it sort of hop-walked on its hind legs, its forelegs held in front of it. The sight alone scared us even more. When it had vanished, headed towards the tree line, we talked about whether the thing we had just seen could have been what made those dome nests that we had found not that long ago. And at the time, this seemed reasonable to us. Now, we knew, though, not to tell his parents about the huge dog-looking thing in the front door windows. We didn't want to be ridiculed again. But we did learn to be more careful when playing in the woods. Only years later did I hear about the Ohio Grassman, a Sasquatch analog for that area. Where we were, it fell within its range. And later still, western Pennsylvania began experiencing a cluster of what people called a dogman. Supposedly, it was pretty much what my friend and I had seen as kids, peering through, of course, the front door. I'm glad we didn't encounter it directly either time, but I kind of wish we had seen it more clearly before it moved away. It still gives me chills thinking about being out on the mountain at dusk with something like that and what would have happened had it gotten through the door. So,
wow.
This dude from 1965 has a dogman encounter. What's funny is the more... It seems to be now that the more these stories are out there and the more people on podcasts are telling them and the more older people are finding out about these stories,
right?
More are coming forward going, we saw the same thing. We just had no idea what it was, no idea what it was. Because like we've talked about, people see something in the 60s, think of Bigfoot. It's no big deal.
Right, yeah.
But this dog man that you and I often bring up, the first time we ever heard about it, was right up here, not too far from us in Oklahoma.
That's the first time I ever heard about it was ever. Up in Thackerville. And yep. Then it wasn't until after that that I learned about Linda Godfrey's work in the Beast of Bray Road.
And it seems to keep going further and further back where people had these encounters.
I wonder if it's something, you know, we've talked about this before, something from a parallel dimension or something. I wonder if that's where like the lore of werewolves started, as people long time ago happened to see these same things. Or, well, I mean,
you remember I did the whole segment that time about the Native Americans that were like could have been dog men or at least worse. Yeah. So it feels as much as I want to say it feels new. Like we always talk about these. Evil's not new and darkness isn't new. I just think it takes on new shapes and new forms.
And I've also, I mean, I've heard about Sasquatch and stuff building dens. Never a dog man, though.
No, never a dog man.
You know, I don't know why, but the dog man. Doesn't seem to be very constructive. He just kills things, snarls.
Well, we know that they're like the bikers. Remember the bikers of the paranormal world? Like the vampires are always the sexy, smart guys.
Girls like vampires. The werewolves are always scumbags.
Yeah.
Yep, that's true. You know, earlier I mentioned collecting and editing some clips together for today's show, and I wasn't able to get those, but you'll hear them when you listen to this in a minute. But this is something I've been wanting to talk to you guys about. And it's just been busy. And I wanted to talk about it ever since I saw the Bob Lazar movie and when he appeared on the Rogan show and everything like that, that this case came out. Now, this took place back in 2004 on November 14th out in the Pacific Ocean, about 100 miles southwest of San Diego, California. And are you aware of this? Have you seen any of the video footage of this? These tic-tac looking thing that these two F-18 pilots saw?
Yes.
And that the radar guys, they were able to watch it. And it wasn't just one.
The shape's my favorite.
So if tic-tac, if you don't know what a tic-tac looks like, it looks, the tic-tac candy. It's kind of, think of a pill, right?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like, a little pill. Now, they said the thing is about the size of an F-18 fighter jet. So it's pretty big. And they've been watching them apparently all week. They said that they probably saw over 100 total on, of course, the radar detecting devices, not visually. And it all began because what they were doing when they were in this area is they were doing some routine, what they call routine naval training, right? They were doing some exercises. They were getting ready to leave for the Persian Gulf. And I guess before they did that, they wanted to do some more exercises and practice. Well, of course, this is something that the Navy does all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to practice so in the day when it really counts, you're prepared. And this group, this was the USS Nimitz, which is an aircraft carrier. And every aircraft carrier, they don't go about it alone. They're part of a strike group. So this was the Nimitz strike group. And in this strike group, they usually have, of course, the one aircraft carrier. They usually have a couple cruisers. They even had a submarine, multiple ships, right? And all these ships work together whenever they go anywhere. They don't use battleships anymore
mm-hmm.
because we have missiles now. You don't need to have the big cannons, right? And in this particular group, not only was the USS Nimitz the carrier, but there was also one of the cruisers, the USS Princeton. And they were out there and they were conducting a series of drills in preparation for their departure in a couple months for the Persian Gulf when this all happened. So apparently, for about a week or a couple days prior to this exercise, the radio intercept officers there on the USS Princeton, and these are all guys that have been doing it for a long time, they had been spotting these odd anomalies on their scopes.
And my job was to man the radars and ID everything that flew in the skies. And I also sat a position called anti-air warfare coordinator, where if we ever had to go to war, I was the guy that was going to launch the missiles and kill shit. In addition to that, I was an air intercept controller. When the Super Hornets take off the carrier, I'm the guy that takes control and takes them to the fight and gets them home safe. And there was a lot of experience in that room. The captain had 28 years, I had 18 years. And the Aegis ship is our newest weapons system afloat. It's got the SPY-1 radar system, the phased array radar system, and I was an expert on that.
So this particular event started a couple days before the exercise, but they kept their mouth shut, right? So they saw some weird stuff. They didn't really say anything. And
well, by the time you get all the logistics of all that going on, you don't want to be the guy that says, man, I think something's going on. Maybe we should hold off on this. Because you're going to be the first guy to get your butt chewed about this whole thing.
Exactly. There's a chain of command. There's things that, you know, you're supposed to bring to your commanding officer. There's things that you should probably just keep your mouth shut. You're not looking for trouble.
You're not,
right? And then your coworkers or your other guys are like, you know, Bob's over there always brown nose. And he's always, you know, we could have had an easy day, but no, you had to bring this up. So now we got to work like 4 extra hours. It's better if Bob just shuts up. One of those kind of deals.
I was on watch, and we were probably 100 miles, I forget how far exactly that day we were, off the coast of San Diego, southwest, kind of off the coast of Mexico Baja. And I started to notice these weird tracks that were popping under my radar coverage right about on San Clemente Island. And the reason why I say they were weird, because they were appearing in groups of 5 to 10 at a time, and they were pretty closely spaced to each other. And they were 28,000 feet going 100 knots tracking south. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, that's kind of odd. I mean, I don't know anything that flies like that. They weren't on the Com Air routes, the commercial airline routes. I wasn't really that concerned about them. I didn't consider them hostile for any reason at all. Another watch or two, as I'm watching, the same formation appeared again. And over the course of 3-4 days, it probably counted up to that point, groups of 5 to 10 at a time. They're probably 50, 60 tracks by then.
And at around 2 p.m., two F-18 Super Hornets from the USS Nimitz, they took off. And they were out, and they were just about to get started in this exercise. And they got a strange and unusual order from an operations officer aboard the USS Princeton. Now, when they got this call, the two fighter jets, they were already airborne. They didn't get the call, then, you know, were sortied, took off for the mission. They were already out there doing a training exercise, getting ready to anyways, when the call came in. And the call apparently told that one of them was a man, the other pilot was a female pilot. And, of course, she had her Rio in the back, who was a male, and he had his own Rio, which is radio intercept officer. You know, it's a two-seater, like in the movie Top Gun. Those are F-14s. These are F-18s. But the same configuration, the guy in the front, the guy that flies it, he's the pilot. The guy in the back, he's watching the radar, all that stuff, right? Because it's too much for one person.
He's trying to call out anything that's around them.
Sure. And so this operations officer from the USS Princeton calls in, and he told them to stop their training maneuvers and to proceed to a new set of coordinates, which he gave them. This was a new waypoint. And the operation officer said that this was a real world task. So the pilots instantly are about to, you know, they're doing this training exercise. They're told to stop doing that. We've got some new coordinates we need you to head over to. Immediately, this is real world, which means this is not a drill. This is not part of the drill. This is serious.
Get your game face on.
This get your is game face down. On and get over there.
And that's, you talk about really amping you up.
Oh, I can imagine, right?
I mean, you, oof.
So I think naturally you can go through the transcripts, but the pilots were, they were talking to each other like, is this real? Is this part of the drill? I mean, they like really pretending like, really good, or is this really good? So they don't know what they're even going to look at. They just gave them the coordinates, head that way. So boom, hit your afterburners. They take off on this new vector. Well, about halfway to where they were supposed to go, a control officer radioed them again and wanted to know if either one of them happened to be carrying any live weapons.
Oh, here we go.
And the pilot said, no. We didn't bring any live weapons. We were just supposed to be doing a drill today. So they don't like us flying around with live missiles.
So nobody's hot at this point.
No one's hot. They don't have any of their missiles. They don't have any of their 20-millimeter cannon, which is, you know, the gun.
You're just bullets, strictly bullets. Observing now is what you're doing.
But they're still sent to go over there.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they go over there. And the Princeton's highly advanced radar had been picking up these mysterious objects again. And the Navy called them anomalous aerial vehicles, or AAVs, which is the new term that the military prefers to use instead of UFOs or unidentified flying objects. And the reason they do this, I've heard, is because when people started applying for these FOIA documents,
okay,
people were applying and they would use code words to search, like tags.
Yeah.
And they were always searching UFO. So if they change the wording or the nomenclature for UFOs to AAVs, nobody's going to find these because they've changed.
So jot that down, folks.
AAVs.
AAV.
Right. So according to a guy, Petty Officer Kevin Day, who was the Princeton senior radar operator at the time, his screen showed well over 100 AAVs over the course of a week.
Goodness. And this was out over the ocean.
Oh, yeah. About 100 miles from San Diego, the Pacific Ocean.
That still goes back to the USO stuff that you and I have discussed in the past multiple times.
Well, this story includes USO. So on this particular day, Mr. Day said that the AAVs first appeared at an altitude of around 80,000 feet, which is far higher than any commercial or military plane flies at. Modern commercial jets cruise at around 28 to 35,000. And anything above like 50,000 feet, you would require you to have a pressure suit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just up there at 80,000 feet and your, you know, plane would just depressurize, you would, I don't know what would happen. You would implode, or your blood would begin to boil, or I think I've heard about it vaporizing. Who knows? Not a good thing. So these weren't just some knuckleheads up there flying around, whatever they were spotting on the radar, right? And they said at first that the Princeton's radar team, they didn't believe what they were seeing, and they blamed these anomalies on equipment malfunctions. So now the guys, they're compelled to tell their commanding officers, like, look, we've been seeing these things on these blips on our radar all week. We can't identify.
Maybe we've
them.
Got bugs in the system, something.
And so, right, they said that it was equipment malfunctions. Turned out that wasn't true.
The guys that work on the Spy One Bravo radar, they had come across and said they needed to take the system down for recalibration because they were getting clutter or ghost tracks. And they needed to recalibrate to get rid of them. And then once they did finish all that recalibration, bring it back up, the tracks didn't disappear. They were still there, but they were actually sharper and clearer.
They were doing diagnostic tests on everything we had to make sure it was not a system malfunction. And it turned out that it wasn't. These were actually real objects. I had the highest spy track quality possible on these contacts.
In this situation, I actually started recording on all four tapes at the same time. That way, it was a one continuous loop, and I was just replacing them as they were, you know, becoming full.
We failed utterly to identify these things. It didn't meet any of the parameters for anything that was known.
After they determined that everything was operating as it should, they began detecting instances, they say, in which the AAVs dropped with astounding speed to lower, busier airspace.
All the objects in the sky, they all dropped out of the sky from 28,000 feet down to 50 feet.
Based on the Spy One Bravo radar system, the object descended at over 24,000 miles an hour.
It was unbelievable because normally what would happen if a normal aircraft did that, First of all, it would fly apart. It wouldn't be able to withstand the G-forces. And there would be multiple sonic booms. It would be boom, 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 boom. And this did not make any sonic booms.
From what I observed, I saw that it went from, you know, right around between 25 and 30,000 feet down to sea level and below sea level. Below sea level was confirmed to me by the actual sonar techs that were in combat, in communications with other techs that had said they had an active track on it under the water. They're talking with their sonar guys on the sub that was with us, you know. And I mean, I was told directly that it did go underwater. You know, I mean, it went from being in the air to underwater. From what they were saying, it was going averaging about 500 knots under the water. You know, so it did slow down when it hit the water, but it didn't affect it inertially.
So this is what put the Princeton's commander on high alert.
Element 151.
Taking action. And that's when he decided to vector those two fighters over there. So when the two fighters were diverted over there to intercept one of these strange objects, they didn't see anything at first. They're like, I don't know, we're at the coordinates you told us to go to. We're not seeing anything. But then finally, the lead pilot, which is Commander David Fravor, he said that he saw what he referred to as a disturbance in the ocean. Not something flying around, something under the water. He said it looked about the size of like a 737 commercial airplane. That's how big this thing was.
Under the water.
Under the water. They said that the water was churning. There was white waves breaking over what looked like a large object just under the surface. Like perhaps maybe you thought it was a submarine, you know, like a Russian sub. Mm-hmm. Or something was under the surface and bubbles and white water and stuff. Something was churning. And that's when they all of a sudden finally saw their first flying vehicle. And that's when they noticed that about 50 feet above the water, Commander Fravor said he saw this thing that looked like a Tic Tac hovering over whatever was under the water.
And it was the same size as his plane that he was
in. The Tic Tac was the same size as his plane.
That's what he estimated
it as. Yes. So I don't know what an
F-18. So it gives you a good idea of how big that thing was underwater.
I was going to say, I don't know how big an F-18 is, but I'm guessing probably 40 feet long.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, your garage is like 20 feet wide. So I would guess 37, 40 feet, something like that.
I got to look it up.
Keep okay, talking. Go for it. And now David Fravor, the pilot of the lead pilot. Now he's a commander of the elite Black Aces squadron. He's also a graduate from the Top Gun school, and he's been a fighter pilot for more than 16 years. So this guy's experienced. He knows what he's looking at. And he said this Tic Tac thing, which looks like the Tic Tac candy, was about 40 feet long, and he could not discern any means of propulsion. He said he didn't see an engine on it. It didn't have any wings on it. Didn't have any rotors on it. It was white and it would move. And he said it would move in swift and erratic ways. He said like it would be moving to your like left to right. And then all of a sudden it would change direction and move over here. And then it would go up 30 feet for no reason, hover there, and then shoot half a mile over here and then go back up several thousand feet, then back down to the water surface. It was behaving erratically. He didn't know what it was. He thought, man, is this like a drone? Like, what is this? What, some kind of technology from China or some other country? I mean, he didn't know. And so he decided at some point that I'm going to try to engage this thing. Now, remember, he doesn't have any missiles. He doesn't have any 20 millimeter rounds, but he could definitely try to lock on with his targeting system. And so he tried to pursue this thing. And he said he could never lock on, no matter how close he got. This thing was making incredible high G turns that he couldn't do himself because, you know, the human body can only do like what, 9 or 10 G's? Mm-hmm. Anything above that, you're going to pass out. You'll lose consciousness. You just physically can't do it. Even though you have a G suit on and you're, you know, doing oots, the proper oots, breathing. Oots. Yeah, all that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But this thing was making incredible high G turns. And he said that it had incredible acceleration. And no matter how hard he tried, he could never, ever lock on with his targeting system. Now, his wingman was there with him. Now, Iceman wasn't his wingman. They don't give the call signs for what their names were. But his wingman, you know, the woman.
Talk to me, Goose.
She was keeping up with Mr. Fravor, and she watched this whole thing go down, as well as the radio operators back on the USS Princeton. They were watching it on their radar screens. And this went on for several minutes. He never could lock on, and he said later that he got the impression that this thing was just toying with him. So at this point,
Anywhere between 55 and say 60 feet.
Okay, so even bigger than I thought. At this point, they set out some other jets. They launched two other jets off the carrier.
So with the information that they're sending back, they're curious enough at the carrier. They're like, we need to back them up. I'm assuming before you get to the story that the jets they launched were probably hot.
Yeah, these, yes, in fact, you're right. Okay. The two jets that they launched now were fully armed.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
They had
missiles and getting bullets.
They got caught with their pants down the first time because they didn't expect this.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen the second time.
By the time the other jets arrived, this tic-tac-looking thing had disappeared.
Just slack gone.
Some of them, and all of them on the radar began to disappear. Some of them went up. Some of them even went down.
So it's almost like they knew they were coming with something.
And one of the radio operators back on the USS Princeton said he tracked it, and he got word from some other people that it had went underwater and that their submarine that was a part of their strike group was actually tracking it underwater. So these things can maneuver. And now you can go on YouTube anywhere and just search up the Nimitz Tic Tac UFO. There's video of it all over. It is incredible. And one of the things that really, this, like I said, this happened a while ago. Well, it happened back in 2004, but it became known to the public like in 2017. And I watched the video clips at that time, and I was pretty intrigued by it. But I became even more intrigued when Bob Lazar was on Joe's show.
Mm-hmm.
Because on Joe's show and also in the documentary, which is on Netflix, I suggest you watch it if you haven't, Bob talks about how these things fly. And he said they don't fly like you see in the movies. The flying saucers, though.
They fly belly first.
Belly first. So if they want to go forward, they have to point the belly of the ship that direction. Now, when it wants to land, the belly's down. And he said that.
The reasoning behind it is because the device on the ship allegedly creates a hole in space-time. So they're not really moving, but more falling through there. That's what allows them to move, is because gravity, nothing affects it. So it can move freely through any type of environment.
You're 100% right. I couldn't have said it any better. And so what I find so intriguing is that when you first hear Bob talk about that, that's a very odd thing. All the sightings, think about all the photos you've seen from mm-hmm. the 60s and the 50s, all the UFOs, they're not flying belly up, belly forward. They're always flat,
mm-hmm.
which makes you start wondering, well, maybe those are fake, because that's not the way they fly. Now, if they're hovering, Bob said they do that. Anyways, what makes this so interesting is if you really watch these videos from the Nimitz incident, whatever that thing is, it's flying belly forward.
Yeah, when it goes to take off, it tilts belly forward and goes.
And when I first saw the videos back in 2017, I had not heard Bob talk about this because, of course, Bob's been in hiding for all this time. But when he said that, it clicked in my mind. I'm like, man, where have I seen that? And then I went and looked, and I'm like, sure enough. So once again, Bob knows about this element.
Yep.
He knows about this bone scanning device.
Uh-huh.
He knows about all this. He talks about how it flies. And then there's these videos before he said that of it flying that way. So, I mean, again, I think Bob Lazar is telling the truth.
I believe him 100%. Like we always said, it goes back to the fact that he has always been, stories never changed, and he's tried to not be in the spotlight after he came forward.
Right. And so the story gets even stranger. I've got a clip here. Check this out.
We pull out their hard drives. We call them RMCs. We call them bricks because they physically heavy like a brick. But they contain the software to run the airplane. And they also record a lot of the data that the air crew sees during the flight. So we take the removable stuff. We take it out. We go downstairs back to our shop.
Patrick's job involves tracking the chain of custody of the hard drives.
Then we open up the safe, put them in the safe. We've got tracking sheets so we know what RMCs are on what airplane. We know who signed them out, who put them in the airplane, who took them out of the airplane.
As he gets ready to wrap up the mission, there's a knock on the door.
Our commanding officer's there, two other guys in flight suits, who I'm assuming were Air Force officers, because pretty sure that's the insignia they had on. But they were not on the ship earlier. I did not see them come on the ship, so I'm not sure how they got there. But the skipper basically said, I need the bricks off the flight. We opened the safe, we put them in the bags. He took them, he took his two anonymous officers and left.
The officers, with the classified hard drives in hand, soon board an HS-60 Seahawk helicopter and leave Nimitz. Soon thereafter, Petty Officer Voorhees has his own visit by unknown officials on the Princeton.
Once they landed and everybody got off, then about, you know, maybe 20 minutes later, I got called in to have all my data recording tapes turned over. And then also told that I needed to reload CEC because it had been wiped. So it was... So I turned over all the tapes, and then they also said if there's any even blank tapes to erase anything else that's in the shop. Well, they were plainclothes people that came aboard on the helicopter. It was my chain of command that took control of the tapes from me. The Hilo left with them after that, so because we went right back to flight ops.
So right here, the radio intercept officers, or whatever their title is, forgive me for butchering the title. I'm sure there's somebody out there in the Navy yelling and screaming. Thank you for your service, please. I love everybody in the armed forces, especially the Navy. I have a lot of uncles and family members that were in the Navy. Anyways, these guys that had witnessed it, they knew something odd was going on, and apparently they have up to four recorders, and they said that they were recording on all four tapes. They were recording this whole event because no one's going to believe them.
Backing up their backups.
And also, in addition to those two F-18 Super Hornets, they had the thing called the Hawkeye, which is one of those big AWACS planes. Yep. They got the big dish on the top, looks like a giant dish, right?
Yeah.
This thing was tracking them. Well, when that thing landed back on the carrier, one of the guy's jobs was to go to the plane, collect the black box or whatever the brick he calls it that records everything that it sees. His job normally,
from the AWAC plane.
Yes, his job normally is to go retrieve that
box. And then cast that box over the side, never to be seen again.
His job normally is to collect that box. He goes back. There's a safe with a combination. He opens that up. He puts the box in there. He has to fill out some kind of document saying which plane it was on.
His chain of custody.
Right, chain of custody. Who retrieved it? Right, you understand. Well, when this happened, he said he went and unloaded it, put it in the safe like he did. He said a few minutes later, two guys he'd never seen before knocked on the door and said, hey, where's the brick? And he's like, well, I put it in the safe like normal. And they said, go get it now. He got it. They took the brick. They made them all sign non-disclosure statements. None of this. You saw this. And those people left on a helicopter immediately. Without knowing it, another radio guy, because this guy he works with avionics, right? He's a tech. He's taking stuff off the airplane. One of the guys that was watching it, like I said, recording all the data that he was seeing on his radar, he said two people in civilian clothes showed up 30 minutes after this whole thing happened, made them all sign non-disclosure statements, wiped everything clean, and he said they took a bunch of the tapes, all of the tapes that he had, and that his commanding officer came to him and said, you need to reboot the system. We're wiping the hard drives. And those two civilians got in a helicopter and they left. So one, he's like, I don't know where they came from. Two, I don't know how they got there so fast. And three, who were they?
Yeah, who were they?
It's almost like MIBs. I mean, he doesn't say that they look like that.
Some division of the government.
But yeah, I mean, it reminds you of like the X-Files with the smoking man and everything. Like, they started seeing this anomalous activity. They started scrambling jets. Instantly, these two civilians showed up on a helicopter.
They were contacted.
Yeah. And, you know,
It's one thing when you hear all this, but when you start adding in where just everyday soldiers are like, I just do what I'm supposed to do and I don't ask questions. And then these two people that I had never seen before appear out of nowhere, take my stuff, make me sign some paperwork, get on the on a chopper and leave.
Yeah.
And they're not military men, but yet the military men are treating them with respect and letting them have the basically carte blanche to whatever they want to do.
I think you have to, because in these situations,
it makes you
got an important job, right? Like they're depending on you.
Yeah.
The safety of our freedom depends on these radio guys watching any incoming targets, right? The same with the pilots who are there to intercept and all of it. But you're right. This happened back in 2004. It wasn't until 2017 that I believe Mr. Fravor, the pilot, has retired, and now he's come out and talked about it. Now all these other guys are coming out and saying, yeah, we were there.
We saw it.
We don't know what it was, but it does not, we don't think it was Chinese. We don't think it was Russian. We don't think it was German. This looked of technology far exceeding anything that we know of.
Do we even have anything that can, I know we don't have that moves like these things do, but what I'm getting at is, that can move like that in the air and then instantly submerge itself in the ocean and move like that in the sea. Go to not just those heights, but also those depths.
Yeah, no.
Like when you can just transfer, because it can move through water the same way it moves through air with that disturbance, is it's just falling through it. So when you get to, we wish we had that. Whoever has that has the keys to the castle.
Well, that's why they don't think it's terrestrial.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the clips the guy talks about, the guys that were tracking it underwater said it was going 500 knots underwater.
Goodness.
So, I'm not sure if that means that's how fast it was moving or that's how deep it was. I guess that would be speed,
it's
right?
Speed, yeah. Knots or speed.
What am I thinking of? Leagues? Is that depth?
Leagues is depth.
That's right. All right. I'm not in the Navy, as you can tell. But they were. Another guy was talking about how they were watching it.
Golly.
And he said, not that it was just so incredible that the thing would accelerate that quickly, but there was no sonic boom. He's like, you would. It doesn't matter if it doesn't have a jet engine. Anything that would move that fast would have to break the sound barrier. You would hear it.
Which lets you know right there, the reason it booms is because the friction against the air.
That's
because there's no friction, because it's falling.
That's what Bob Lazar was saying mm-hmm. in this documentary, is people always look at these things maneuvering at incredible speed, incredible high G turns, but he's like, you're thinking about it all wrong. If when you're inside the crafts, at least the ones he worked on at S4, there, Area 51, that it creates its own gravitational field, and so whoever's inside of that, they don't feel the effects of gravity, therefore no G's. It doesn't affect you at all.
Remember, he also said he doesn't know how they were able to talk to each other through radio, can remain in radio contact while that thing
could
do that.
Because gravity bends all radio waves.
Everything.
Even light.
Yeah.
So how they were able to talk to it. Remember, I'm talking about the aliens, but he knows that when he was there, there was human beings piloting the things when they were testing it. How do you even begin to train that? Because you heard him talking about there was no display. Excuse me. There was no wires. Like, how does that happen?
How do you even? Yeah.
And you thought Chuck Yeager was a good test pilot.
Right?
How about the guys flying the UFOs or the Tic Tacs?
The first guy to get in and go and do something and get it off the ground. Can you imagine? Like that dude, of course, he's probably dead now. But
I mean,
those guys don't get to come home that do that kind of stuff. They have what's in air quotes known as an accident.
Right. I mean, is there even anything physically living piloting the things? Or are they like super sophisticated drones? Maybe there's robots or AI.
Like we've talked about, the grays are more like, they're like AI. They're not real creatures. You know, they're like just, they're almost like drones themselves.
Yeah, I mean, maybe all of these Tic Tacs, because 50 to 100 of these Tic Tacs? It's not like they just saw one. They were tracking multiple ones.
And it's not like they were the small orbs that we've discussed where people see them the size of beach balls that you could tell that you would think would be something, would be a probe that you sent out. These things are, let's say, 60 feet. They're 60 foot, 20 yards long, flying 100 of them.
And it didn't look like a light. It wasn't something glowing. I mean, they said it was physical. You could see it.
Enough where you can see it turn belly forward and shoot through the air.
Uh-huh. And they were underwater. And something was causing a disturbance under the surface of the water. So it makes you wonder, is that a mothership?
Yeah, right.
I mean, you think about it. How easy would it be in the middle of the night? Of course, like, you know, you always talk about with the airplanes. There's no lights. Pitch black.
Yeah.
On a moonless night. How easy would it be to descend from space and go right into the ocean and just set up shop there? No one would ever know.
I think the ocean is the ideal hiding place for any and everything.
Because I agree.
Because we literally don't know, like, know very little about a lot of it.
Yeah.
Because we don't have the ability to get to it. It's funny that we can take air and make pressurized suits and fly at a high altitude, but it takes a lot more to keep from getting crushed from all the different levels of atmosphere pressing in as you start going deep. And not just that, it's one thing to have the friction of air, but the friction of water is a whole nother level. The only way you can move through it is with a device like that. That it creates its own little atmospheric chamber around whatever you're in, that you're falling kind of in between the realms of that reality, or you know what I mean? Like
I do, yeah.
Because there's no way you can push against it and not, because water, you're going to be displacing, like
yes,
on the front
absolutely.
Of a battleship or like on the front of a sub. They can only go so fast, and then the pressure and the flow would rip the fins, would tear itself apart, pushing against the water.
Right.
So, no, it's not ours.
And these are, like we've talked about so many times, these are people who are trained observers, right? We always talk about it depends on, you got Billy Bob who lives in the trailer park. He sees something, you don't, it's not as reliable.
Yeah, don't trust me. Like, I can't really, I couldn't tell you a whole lot of anything.
Yeah, exactly. Don't listen to anything I say. But, you know, this is a trained pilot, okay? It's not, you don't get to be a fighter pilot. I mean, they don't just hand the keys over, right?
No.
You have to be an officer. No. You have to have a college degree to even go down that path.
If they did, you and I would be flying planes.
Right. They're entrusted with this stuff. All these radio, you know, officers, the guys in the Hawkeye, they call it, which is like the AWACS, the big radar plane saw it. The submarine saw it. Everybody in the carrier group, multiple people that are trained to do this, all witnessed it. Somebody showed up, confiscated all the data they had. And when you listen to the guys that are they're out talking about it, I mean, they're genuine. They're like, I didn't want to say anything until Fravor started talking about it. Now I feel like I can come forward. And
think about all the other guys on the ship that heard the story that night.
Oh,
like they know those guys. And the dudes are like, what we saw is not from this planet, man. We do not know what that was.
So, and this is a pretty cool case, but this is only one. How many times has something not as fantastic as this been seen by a radio officer, a radar intercept officer, or a pilot, and maybe didn't say anything, or maybe did and it was just covered it up? I have to believe that this stuff has been going on for a long time, and I have to believe that a lot of people have seen things and were told never to discuss this.
Yeah.
I mean, we even had the guy that was at Malmstrom Air Nuclear Base, remember?
Yeah.
And I mean, this is a guy that's in charge of nuclear warheads.
I feel terrible because I just went blank on his name.
I did too.
And we had him on.
We've had him on. He's a super nice guy.
But yeah, he was talking about it. That's what it always makes me think about every time, is how much of that interaction has actually taken place. And we don't, well, like this, it happened in 04 and it just started coming out in 2017. That's actually pretty good timing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's actually a really good window there of it not taking too terribly long for that stuff to pop forward. Whereas, you know, most of the time we don't hear about it for another 20 years. So,
I mean, and that's what I'm saying, is how many other people have seen this or similar things?
Yeah.
I think it happens way more than we know.
And
how would you feel knowing, how would you know, like, to carry that burden around, right? Like, sitting at dinner parties and you hear people bringing up the UFO subject and you want to say something, but you can't.
There's no way I could deal with it because I'm a terrible liar. You know what I mean? Like, it would freak me out to know that I was involved in something like that. And then when people would start talking about it, I would want to tell them what I knew. You know, I'd want to be like, yeah. I remember all that. Or this is what experience I had. Those guys that keep those secrets, I still stand by the fact that we don't need to know everything.
I agree.
It's better for me. It would make me feel better if I didn't know all the secrets. Like, I don't want to know what goes on, what it takes. I don't need to know all that stuff. But it also,
Robert Salas, that was his name.
That's it. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I couldn't think of it. Sorry, Robert. Cool guy. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, and
I wonder if they're ever going to be, and I don't think there is, but I just wonder if they're ever going to be some sort of disclosure where they let us know, hey, look, we do know there's something out there. We just can't put our finger on it, because I think a saying yes opens a whole can of worms. That's almost like when your wife asks you, does that woman look pretty to you?
Right. Yeah.
You never answer that question.
Well, and you know, and maybe that's part of the reason that us and Russia and Korea and we have problems with these other countries is they each have all seen some stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're wanting to know how much we know, but nobody wants to show their cards.
It's like every country's playing hold'em against
one another.
You know
what I'm saying?
Because we all see what's in the middle of the table, but we don't know the last two cards everybody's holding.
So Bob talked about there at Area 51 that we had nine of them, nine different ones, and that they ranged in size and shapes.
And he said the Russians worked with him.
The Russians worked with him. Some Germans worked. So how are we so lucky as only America has these?
Yeah.
Don't some of the other countries have them? Or if not, how did we get all of them? Or maybe they were all just found here? Because he said some of them appeared to be ancient, like they were found in the ground.
Yeah, he said that the first one that they had found was found during an archaeological dig.
Right. So
how long has that been?
So, and like, is there...
Makes you take a whole new take on ancient aliens.
Yeah, right. Is there? I didn't talk to Tsoukalos. So how many other countries
does that
have them? Or what about these like poor third world countries? There could be stuff under there, but they don't have the money or the to start digging.
Maybe they're over there. I like to believe that they're in some of the older, like the older Middle Eastern countries or things like that.
Yeah, why is that? That's like a romantic idea.
I think because of Indiana Jones. But the reason I like to think is I like to think that they know they're there and they're hidden and they treat them like some sort of hidden mystical temple and that they go in there for prayer and to study and all this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they're hidden under parts of a mountain and you go in part of this to get to it. Right. I don't know. But it does. There's getting to be so much now and there's so much more information and so many more ways to study it. I feel like we're learning a lot more now about that subject.
So let me ask you this. So. Yeah. You've seen all the footage. You've heard the stories. You've been doing the show for 6 years.
6 years this week, folks. 6 year anniversary.
And you've been interested in this stuff far beyond just this show. Like I remember even when we were children, we would talk about it. If this is real, which I think it is because there's tons of evidence and footage.
Yeah.
What are they doing? What are they doing? They're obviously not wanting us to know that they're there because that's the reason they're hiding. There'd be no reason to hide. Unless you're guilty of something or you don't want to be seen. And part two, now that we see that these are here and real and, you know, Bob's come out too. I mean, are you scared? Should we be scared? I don't know.
My take on it is this, with you asking that question. Bob Lazar said something during that interview on Joe's podcast that I never once thought about because I'm not smart, but I never once thought about it. Until he said it. And then it's made me completely reevaluate everything that I thought about this UFO phenomena. And it's simply this. When Joe was talking about the propulsion system with Bob, Joe brought up the fact, he goes, they must think it's ridiculous that we use fossil fuels. And Bob said, no. He said, just because they have an advanced propulsion system does not mean they're more advanced than we are. It just means that they've learned a way to have advanced propulsion. They may have no idea how we can turn fossil fuel into fuel that will power an engine like we do it. To them, that is science fiction.
Right. He talked about the element 115 or whatever. Maybe they're, where they're from, it's rich in abundance. It's everywhere.
It's like water is here. So that with that statement, it made me start thinking is maybe it's simply this. They are down here curious and visiting all these years like we send probes to Mars. If we had ships where we could get to Mars easily, people would be going to Mars all the time.
Yeah.
And it would be almost like an intergalactic truck stop. So maybe, just maybe, that they're not that much more advanced than we are. Only in travel, only in space travel is the only thing that they're advanced in. So they come here because their interactions don't seem like interactions of people that are bringing ill will, nor does it seem like the interactions of something that wants to study us so much. It's almost like they are driving through a petting zoo and they are just looking. And every now and again, they get caught and they got to shag ass and get out of there.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. So this whole thing, like, I don't think of it as anything negative. I know certain people, you know, they claim all this alien abduction.
Right.
That happens
a lot when people are sleeping.
Yeah.
So I think that could be more linked to.
But I don't know that.
Sleep disorder. No, yeah. I don't know that.
I have no idea. So I'm not saying that all of them are or none of them are. Whatever it is, it could very well be that. So I don't doubt that. Look, there's some sinister human beings. There's bound to be sinister aliens that would come down here.
Do you think
they're
all the same alien or is there different ones? Like this one's from Raider Reticuli. This one's from some other galaxy. Or is it all one group?
I feel like it's all one group. And the reason I say that is because if they were multiples, then we would see, I feel like we would see something is just like the cultures are different here on this planet. I think it's all one group of different cultures, but it's all one species of that planet. Because if it was multiple planets, like we see in, say, Star Wars, each one of those multiple planets have multiple species. They don't all get along. Every agenda would be different. But this still feels like they are still taking baby steps. Like even from the 50s, like it feels like the last 70 years have still been these things taking baby steps into interacting with us. And I think what freaks them out is the fact that we have the ability to destroy this planet. And in turn, they may see it as we have the ability to destroy their planet if we so felt like we were being attacked and found a way to get the rocket to them. They may not have the ability to create nuclear fusion or to create any sort of nuclear or atomic bombs. And the reason they showed up for that is they're like, they've discovered something that we can't do on our planet. And like, this is nothing but danger. So we need to keep an eye on this the whole time. It would be just like right now, if we noticed that there was a whole troop of chimpanzees, let's say in the Congo, 200 or 300, that all of a sudden started napping rocks and making bows and arrows. Everybody would be like, what is going on over there?
And Planet of the Apes.
Well, and if that started slowly coming around where they all of a sudden started evolving at an extremely high rate, don't you think everybody with a camera and a gun would be over there watching that? So it's the same thing, as I feel like it's the same group. I don't think it's multiple groups of aliens and all these different planets, because I think if you get that many involved, somebody would make a mistake and we would get one.
Do you think that the higher ups in the government have struck a deal with these extraterrestrials and are trading technology notes?
As awesome as that would be, it would be great for a conspiracy. I don't even think it goes that far.
No, I don't think it does.
I don't think they're interacting with anybody here other than against their will.
And that's right. I don't think so either. There may not be any interaction because it's not even a physical thing.
Yeah.
Like we talked about, it could be simply everything's drones or AI or whatever. I don't know. Interesting subject. I'd like to bring that up. Like I said, go over there, Google search, you know, Nimitz tic-tac-toe UFO on YouTube or all over Google. You'll see pictures of it if you haven't already. Pretty interesting stuff, man. What do you got planned for your week?
I am going to watch a high school football game in Oklahoma this weekend, going to visit some cousins. Going to go check everything out up there. I haven't been up there in several years, so we're going up to hang out and see them. And then the rest of the time will be probably recouping my spine. I've been ice packing and stretching, so that's all I'm doing. I'm trying to get ready for bow season starting up, and so that's pretty much it. It's just trying to get over being old.
I'm going to a wedding.
Yes.
One of my friend's little brother's getting married over there in Fort Worth, so we're going to be doing that. Have a good old time.
Is it Clint? Is it his wedding?
Yep.
I thought so, yep.
And outside of that.
Open bar?
Oh, yeah.
He made a huge mistake. He's made a huge mistake.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. Speaking of fun, you told me to check out this trailer today for this new streaming service about Boba Fett.
The Mandalorian.
Man, that looks good.
Disney Plus, I'm going to lose my mind. Boba Fett is kind of like the Predator to me. He's always been like the one that I really, like, I've got three things that I really loved growing up, right? Like characters. Boba Fett, the Predator, and the Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
And Boba Fett, when I saw that trailer, folks, if you don't know, and I'm sure most all of you do, but if you don't, go on YouTube, watch the trailer from The Mandalorian. It is going to be a series on the upcoming new Disney Plus, and I can't wait to watch it.
It looks cool.
It looks awesome.
Well, if you have any stories of your own you'd like to share with me and Cam, feel free to email us at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can follow us on all forms of social media. Till next time, folks, stay out of trouble. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all. We'll be right back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.